Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Well, there's never a dull moment from the Trump administration, and sometimes you got to kind of catch your breath to get a day where nothing happens, so much going on, and we're going to talk about all of the latest stuff. My guest, Professor Ben Epstein from DePaul University, who is on top of all of this stuff, a frequent guest on my Politics Tonight television show on CLTV, but today we want to look at for kickers, or to start off, the latest kind of topic in the news, which is the Republican replacement for Obamacare, their health care plan, which Secretary Tom Price has said this is very patient-oriented, and that's going to be the key. So, Ben, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
And so as you've taken a review, I know there's a lot more to see with regard to this plan, but do Republicans do what they promised to do, which is to say health care is going to be cheaper, going to be accessible, everyone's going to get covered?
Tough to say right off the bat, but
I'll give you the answer. The answer is no. Go ahead.
Yeah, it certainly seems like this is not, so far, this is not a bill that's making anyone very happy. There are legions from the far right of the Republican Party that are saying this is Obamacare light and are immediately frustrated by it. There are at least four senators that are relatively moderate on the Republican side that have said they're not going to support it. They're not going to support anything if it doesn't, if it rolls back Medicaid expansion, which this does. So this seems to be just within the Republican Party something that's not satisfying anyone, and it's definitely going to be raising costs based on what early guests are, even though this has never been actually scored by the Congressional Budget Office.
Yeah, they're proceeding without it getting scored, although in a press conference about this, the Republicans said, well, the Democrats didn't score Obamacare either before it got to this stage. So they said, that's just the way we do things. But, you know, all you have to do is use a little common sense. If you get rid of the mandates, the requirement that people have insurance or that employers buy insurance, and that's the first thing that goes out the window. But you keep the pre-existing coverage. You keep the coverage until you're 26 for your kids at home. You keep the no caps on insurance. Keep all that great stuff, which everybody loved. You don't need to be a brain surgeon to figure out that it's not paid for. You can't pay for
No, exactly. And one thing that of many things that have stuck out as I've started to look over this is that while they don't require the individual mandate, they don't require the a penalty or a tax if you choose not to get insurance, you can be subject to up to a 30% increase if your coverage lapses. So if you currently are on, it seems to try to replace it with keeping those people who currently have coverage with coverage. Except one thing that's notable there is that excess, that penalty would be taken by the insurance companies, right? Which is not to say that insurance companies are good or bad, but if it's essentially a different version, but clearly is going to benefit insurance companies as opposed to the government basically saying, we would love for you all to get insurance as opposed to paying a mandate, but if you have to pay a mandate, that's sort of the incentive. It just seems like a little bit of a crazy game of just shifting money around and not necessarily anything adding up.
And so I don't know this to be the case, but one of the Republicans said the reason that provision came about that you're talking about is because people were buying health insurance, paying for it for 9 months, dropping it, getting what they said were 3 free months of insurance via COBRA, which I don't think COBRA is free, but okay,
no.
3 free months via COBRA, and then buying it again. So they're saying they're kind of gaming the system by only buying it, sort of parts of the year. And what they were able to do, for example, that if they get sick, they could buy into the system then. And Republicans don't want that. They basically say, you can't get fire insurance once your roof is on fire. You better do it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the explanation. I don't know. Do you find that credible?
Not on first glance, no. I think that to go through the process of getting insurance through an employer or through these exchanges, even after it had been worked through very clearly, was it's a big process. It happens on a yearly basis. I with any social service, is it 100% fraud proof? Probably not. But is this something that directly benefits millions and millions of people, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that virtually everyone that is nonpartisan that has looked at this so far has said it's going to reduce the number of people that have health insurance. It would be one of the most unprecedented rollbacks of a social program of this size that we've ever had in this country. And I think that Republicans for a long time have maybe thought about the idea of trying to touch this third rail, but they're very actively doing that. And I think that the political consequences are just starting to be felt here, both in town halls and now with the reality of what this may be, with actual pushback within their own party. It's the political fallout could be dramatic.
Well, especially if it's felt by people not being able to get insurance.
Absolutely.
Congressman Jason Chaffetz was on CNN, and they were pushing. Yeah. It's a little linguistic trick here, because there's this concept of, you know, what people ask is, will everybody get coverage? And the response you get from Republicans, such as Chaffetz, there will absolutely be access for everybody. Now, that is not the same thing. So
correct.
When asked and pushed by the moderators on CNN, will more people get coverage? Essentially, he said no.
Right.
Pushed, he admitted it. So the way they're getting around this, they keep talking about everyone, even the poorest of people, will have access. Well, I guess nobody would stop you from buying it, but if you can't afford it, one of his other comments today was, "Don't buy a cell phone, buy health insurance." That was
That was the one that he's been getting the most pushback about, and he later sort of said it probably didn't come out exactly the same way, but he mentioned in that sort of walking back later on Fox that that he's all about self-reliance. That was his quote, right? He wants people to be able to control their own finances, be able to make their own decisions. And this is a consistent argument from especially fiscal conservatives, but also talking about these social programs, right? That they are, that they would like government money to be spent not towards this, but to allow people to keep their money and use it however they would like.
But by the way, Ben, that is inviting, isn't it? The notion of saying, look, you shouldn't be made to buy insurance. You buy it if you want to. You're a grown-up and do it. I mean, that is an appealing concept.
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. It speaks to fundamental American ideas of freedom and choice and the ability to lead your own life. It absolutely is sold well. But as you suggested, it's not practical. There are millions and millions and millions of people. The vast majority of the country does not have enough money in a savings account to deal with a major medical crisis in terms of the cost if they are not insured. I was just reading someone I know through academia that was relaying a story that she went through and that she simply could not have imagine going through this unexpected medical crisis in her family without health insurance, and that is something that is just not available, not affordable to a huge portion of the country.
Probably what happens is probably young people, if anything, buy a catastrophic policy, right? Just
right.
The worst of disasters. But I don't see how the system survives. Now, I don't know if you took a close enough look. I have not read the basis for this, but I do know they have a very important provision in there, which is to give a tax break to healthcare executives of these insurance companies of $500,000 or something like that, or when they make $500,000, whatever. They're all getting a tax break in there. Have you been able to find the important reason for that benefit?
No, I haven't seen that. I know that the major tax piece that I've been focusing on is the shift from from these penalties into what they're calling a tax credit,
right.
And who would qualify and under what area. But no, I've not heard about any specific tax breaks.
It's probably in the small print.
Yeah. We're all this is a. It's coming at us fast and furious here.
And now the way the folks that say this is Obama light, it's because what's upsetting them, the ones who really want Obamacare gone, is what they're doing now. Instead of sort of making people buy insurance, essentially you're going to be getting tax credits. Take them if you are. Actually, I think the way it plays out, you get a tax credit no matter what, but it is based on age, not income. It's really strange because if you're older, you get more money, but you might be wealthier than somebody who's younger. I'm not quite sure why that's going to work.
It seems to be a bit of a combination between those two, actually, that there's essentially a sort of a two-tiered economic one, and then I think there are a couple tiers in terms of ages, that if you are making $75,000 or more individually or $150,000 or more as a household, that you would not be eligible for these for these credits, and then along with that, it would be, as you said, escalating based on age, anywhere from 2,000 if you're under 30 up to, I think, about 4,000 for people that are over 60.
But the poorest of people, the folks who are on Medicaid, and of course, right. They're very smart, because what they do is they phase out the subsidies. The first part of them phases out in 2018. Isn't that interesting? It'll phase out after the midterm elections.
Exactly.
And the rest of this stuff, when it all shifts to the states and puts the burden on governors who will get stuck, that part happens in 2020. Why? Isn't that amazing? Right after the presidential election. That's not.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, the strategy here is clear and smart and, frankly, was one taken by Democrats when they rolled it out. If you remember, there were different pieces of the Affordable Care Act that were going to be phased in. Some of the the individual mandate, for instance, being something that was escalating and came in later, especially after, again, the midterm.
They're all guilty of it.
Yeah, exactly. But what happened in the middle, like if it was supposed to shield Democrats in those midterm elections, it didn't. I mean, Democrats were absolutely demolished in 2010.
So that's your warning to Republicans this time,
right? I think that the geographic map in terms of the Senate in particular in 2018, Republicans are in a really strong position there. Democrats are more vulnerable, and so the historical precedent of the party of the president losing a lot of seats may or may not bear out, but Republicans are in a good place there. But if you continue with a tumultuous administration and something like this that is going to take away a major benefit for millions of people, that can shift the math on how people are voting, and 2010 should be on the minds of Republicans.
While I have you, let's talk a little bit about the new travel ban. It looks like the administration, even though they said see you in court and everything else, they basically said we better just do what the courts are telling us to do. They seem to have fixed a lot of the things. You got a green card, you're okay. You got a visa, you're okay. If you're from Iraq, you're going to be okay. If you're from Syria, you're not necessarily not going to come in anymore. It doesn't look – I mean, this one may hold water, and that's sort of my legal view of things. It may just hold water, and they may carry it out. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that that's right. This seems like an example of something that the early Trump administration has been doing, which is to sometimes sort of roll things out in beta. And what I mean by that is they're sort of – they rolled out this initial executive order, had massive pushback on it, both – you know, across the country and then also to the courts, realized that the best strategy was not to continue all the way through the Supreme Court, and did the right move, which was to sort of roll this back and then pull it back, create a new executive order that changes a few things to make it much more legally supported, and then to release it in a much less dramatic way. There's going to be a 10-day sort of warning period for everyone to get involved.
So much for that. Careful, we can't wait because terrorists are changing their flight reservations as we speak thing.
Exactly. The immediacy of it and the reason why they were criticizing the courts for stopping this was because of all of the dangers that could be flooding over our, you know, over our borders, you know, as we speak. And yet now the idea is, clearly the administration has learned from the past. I mean, they had even the rollout itself, Donald Trump signing it in private, one picture of it, a few people from his administration talking about it, not answering any questions, and really just almost, you know, specifically going point by point based on the legal problems, changing those and leaving most of the rest the same.
Just a quick question on the whole wiretapping craziness, unless you believe that Obama wiretapped Trump. But
I do not.
Assuming that you don't. Let me ask you, will it continue to have legs? I mean, you know, obviously with all the health, with the healthcare stuff and the travel ban thing, you know, the way the media operates, the wiretapping thing will should sort of fade away in the news, or will it?
That's a great question. I mean, I think I almost take the reverse position where I think that the healthcare rollout was smart in that they seem to sort of accelerate the process of rolling this out because of all this other turmoil, right? It's impossible to follow all of these different things at the same time, and or at least follow them all well. So I think that good money would be on this idea of wiretapping fading, except the idea that it's so salacious and it's so interesting and potentially damaging to one actor or another, depending on how this plays out. It's really shocking, and it's also connected to this ongoing Russian scandal, which is, you know, turning into the Trump's version of Clinton's emails. It's not going to be going away anytime soon. There are going to be a series of investigations. So I think that it does constantly come out. I don't think that it's going away entirely. I think that there will be things that continually bring this into the news. I know that there are journalists from many different organizations that are diving into this full time right now, and I think that it you know, is just a really remarkable example of where we are in 2017 in the relationship between this administration and the media. It is really stunning. It's something that I'm following closely.
There's going to be books,
you know,
about it. One final very quick question. Democrats now have a leader, Tom Perez, and I don't know.
Yes.
It's like he's missing in action. I mean, all this stuff is going on. Maybe I'm missing it. I'm sort of like, where are the Democrats? I mean, they're getting statements issued. Jan Schakowsky, they're issuing statements. But if this were all reversed, I just feel as though Republicans would be controlling the media.
Yep.
And here, Democrats just seem to be MIA.
I totally agree. I think that there was a lot of buildup to the election of the DNC chair and some people thinking about that as a proxy war between the more liberal Bernie Sanders contingent and more mainstream Obama and Clinton supporters. But in the end of the day, Perez and Keith Ellison, they're going to be working together, but they're clearly trying to figure out what their strategy is. This needs to be an organizational, structural change for the Democratic Party and a messaging one. You're right. And so far, they haven't been on the front steps organizing anything. We see Chuck Schumer. We see Jan Schakowsky. We've seen a number of people making statements. But there is not an organized effort besides sort of unified but relatively quiet opposition. And I think that will need to change and need to change fairly quickly. There's going to be an early buildup to a number of local and statewide elections, and 2018 it doesn't just happen out of thin air. There needs to be a lot of planning and organizing on the electoral side, but also on the messaging and on the opposition side if you're going to be sort of taking a piece of the playbook out of, again, Republicans from 2008 to 2010. The Democrats don't seem to be doing that yet.
And we'll monitor to see if they ever do. Professor Ben Epstein of DePaul University, I would love to take a class from you. I think it would just be amazing to sit in your class. But then again, I really don't want to go back to school.
Well, I appreciate it. It's definitely an exciting time to be teaching politics.
It is. And it's like having my own private class with you when I have you on my show. So thank you for joining me here on the podcast again. We'll see you soon on Politics Tonight. Thanks, Ben.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
Here comes Miss Ritter.
Oh.
She spent the night with Mr. Kodai.
Okay.
They always kiss goodbye at the newsstand, and then she walks around the block to make us think she's been home.
Good morning.
Good day.
How are you this glorious day? Have you seen a lovelier morning?
Never.
Oh, it's too nice a day to be inside shuffling soap.
Well, as you can tell from that music, it is Broadway time, but in a different way, because while you were just listening to some music from a great Broadway show called She Loves Me, played for so long on Broadway, and had the chance to see it there. Actually, I had the chance to see it there, but I chose not to. I chose to see something else, and I'll tell you why. Because I actually had the opportunity to watch it live in the comfort of my living room. And I opted to do that instead of going to New York to see it. And the reason I was able to do it is because of a relatively new Broadway service, streaming service. It's called Broadway HD that I subscribe to at home. And when I came across this, and you all know I'm a huge theater lover, and many of you are too, I wanted to get to the founders of this website, of this streaming service, and to find out what led them to do this and share this with you. Because if you're not familiar with it and you're a Broadway fan, I think we're going to convince you that you need to check this out as well. And joining me now, the co-founders of Broadway HD, which you can find at BroadwayHD.com, Stuart Lane and Bonnie Comley. And welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here. And hello, Chicago.
Exactly. And hello back to you. So I've got to start. So here I kind of trip on. Actually, I think I saw it on Facebook. I don't know where I first came across it. But there's this sort of Broadway HD thing out there, which I checked out and I went, definitely got to do this. I immediately did. But let me ask you, what led the two of you, talk about your background a little bit for folks who may not know you, that led you to say, we need to kind of create this streaming service?
Well, I've been involved with live theater my entire life, starting falling in love with it when I was 11 years old after seeing my first Broadway show. And so it followed through middle school, high school, acting degree from Boston University with a BFA, working all aspects, building sets, working lights, joining the Equity, SAG, after unions. And then I sort of transitioned into producing as I found that there was an opportunity because it was in the late 70s and theater really needed some leadership. And over the years, I've seen how it's been attempted to try and capture shows as technology has evolved from broadcast television to cable TV to pay-per-view. And no one's been able to do it successfully. And Bonnie, should tell you, came out of the media background, and we were trying to marry these two concepts. And it was the convergence of culture and technology and timing, which we said now was the point where we should start bringing theater into the 21st century with the technology available. So with the popularity of movies like Pitch, Perfect Pitch, and TV shows like Glee, and the popularity of the shows like the Voice and America's Got Talent, and of course Broadway itself has been booming for the last 20 years, so the audiences there have been growing, and I might add getting younger. We said this was the time that we should really approach starting our own BroadwayHD.com website.
Yeah, and Bonnie, before I come to you, Stuart, I'm curious, what was the first Broadway show you saw?
I won't bore you with the whole story, but I was best friends with this kid, Ricky, back in 1963 for like 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade. We were like real buddies. And I used to see his father hanging out after the show, after school. I say, you know, Ricky, doesn't your father work for a living? He goes, yeah, he's an actor. He works at night. I go, works at night? What a great concept. So tell me more. You know, that's when it's fun, at nighttime. Well, I never heard of his father before. But one day he says, you know, my dad is in a Broadway show, and I'd never seen a Broadway show. So I put on my, borrowed my father's tie, you know, put on my jacket. Yeah. We drive into New York, which is still, I find New York City an exciting adventure. I went to a real professional theater house, not just a movie, Matchbox movie theater with the, you know, that looked like all the others,
right,
but
the
a real
New York
theater
theaters,
designed.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then I get a ticket that doesn't say admit one, but it says the name of the show on it, and they give me a playbill. I got two souvenirs, and the show hasn't even started yet. I'm just so pumped up. They march us down to the front row, and the curtain goes up on a musical called Little Me, starring Sid Caesar, Ricky's father.
What, really?
Ricky Caesar. That was
Little Ricky Caesar. I love
Little Ricky.
I love
so,
that.
So Cy Coleman had done the music. Neil Simon had done the book. It's a funny, funny musical, and the audience, we're just having a great time together, and this is the guy I used to have, you know, go over to his house for dinner, and there he is on stage performing.
I love it.
And then we go backstage, and there's Sid holding court with all his friends, and back slapping and laughing and talking about the show, and I said to myself, I have a purpose in life. This is something I want to do. I want to be part of.
You could have been the next Imogene Coca if you'd given yourself some time. Let me performing with it. Well, Bonnie, I know, you know what? I didn't really know where Stuart was going to take that story, and it was a great one. So good luck topping that. But
I won't top it. Okay. I don't.
So give us quickly your sort of love of Broadway that took you to partner with Stuart and say, I agree with you. We need to do this.
Well, my business background is business. And then I went from business to television production, and then I was able to translate that moving from Massachusetts to New York, and was working as a reporter and a host for a TV show and covering theater, because I had never, I'm one of four children in, you know, middle class America, so yeah. Going to Broadway shows was not on our entertainment radar. So I'd never seen a Broadway show till I was an adult, and I was covering it for a TV show that I was working for. And, you know, got to see theater there, but never quite understood what the business model was to it, and always thought, coming from TV, gee, it's a shame that these shows don't run longer and more people don't see them.
Right.
When I met Stu, I actually interviewed him for a segment on the TV show that I was doing. And yeah, that was his question, like, why is there not more theater on television? I said, there's a bunch of reasons. And a lot of them are due to, you know, unions and exploiting the the property itself, that, you know, people just don't want to put, you know, theater is theater and TV is TV. Yeah, so, but,
and that was then, been, and now, you know, now we're now.
Forever and, trying to marry those two things, yeah. And I think with Broadway HD, that's what we did. We had, over the years, been able to do what we call one-offs, which was we would be involved with a show where we would have the opportunity to go in and shoot film, videotape, whatever you want to call it, depending on the time, to capture these shows digitally and put them onto TV or DVD. And we had done about 10 of them over the years, and always critically acclaimed, but not always the business part of it wasn't as strong as what we wanted, and we kind of looked at each other and said, you know, everybody loves this. Like, where is the business in here? Where is this going? And about 4 years ago, we said, you know what? The whole world is going to streaming, so let's build a streaming website for theater. And we had done about 10 shows at that point, but that wasn't enough to really give us enough content to put out a website. So we turned to colleagues and looked at other content providers that had already shot some of this stuff and said, you know what, there's a lot of it out there. So we aggregated it all into one place. So just like a sports channel or MTV or Cartoon Network, we put all this similar content, which was theater, stage plays, and musicals, right, full-length pieces that were put onto videotape and put them onto our site.
And so,
originally, everything was going to be. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to move along a little bit and just say, so for people that I watch it, like, through my Apple system, you can do it in Roku or your computers, whatever, however you want to watch it. But what you do is you go on there, and there's dramas, there's musicals. If you've never seen Cats or Phantom or Les Mis or Gypsy or Sondheim tributes or all these shows, they're there all the time. I want to tell you what I especially love that you do, because there are certain things. Look, I'm a big Broadway guy, so some of the things you have up on the website, I have the DVD. I own the DVD. A lot of people don't want to do that, and so it's a chance to watch it. But you have these moments where you live stream. That was my She Loves Me comment early on. You've done that with some other shows. And by the way, what I love about it is, for She Loves Me, I was not home. I wasn't able to watch it when you actually streamed it live, and it really is live. But you kept it available for subscribers for a period of time. So I caught up with it, I think, the following week or so when I had time. But to me, that's the brilliance of what you do. It's that live streaming. And I'm curious whether you get resistance or an openness from various producers and productions to say, yeah, you can do that here.
Well, we have 180 titles now that are full-length features on our site, but the live streaming are these special events,
yeah,
that we are trying to do. You know, we're trying to make them more scheduled, so we're only a year and a half old as a business, and we're trying to make them more predictable about, oh, tune in the first Saturday of every month, and there will be that new live stream. But we have to partner with a show in order to be able to do that time, and the first Saturday of every month might not be convenient for every show that we talk
to.
So we're trying to schedule these things more predictably. That's one part of it. The second thing is that you said, are we experiencing any resistance? And the answer is yes. There's a lot of people that believe that if you can see something online or in a digital form, that you're not going to go see the live thing. And Stu and I don't agree with that, because we equate it to a sports event, that you can go to the football stadium and watch a football game, or you can watch it on TV, and they're two very, very different experiences. Both of them enjoyable, but very different.
And so let me go to Stuart. And Stuart, that's right. Look, when I go to the theater, I'm always within the first couple of rows of the show. So when I watch the live streaming events you guys have, for me, it's sort of like, yeah, I feel like I'm there again. But, you know, most people are not sitting down front. Most people are in the balconies, in the mezzanines, in the dress circle, in the back of the orchestra. And they're not going to get the view that you – or if they don't live in New York and have no plans to go to New York, Stu, they're not going to get to see the show the way you bring it to them.
Well, in that sense, we're creating a brand new art form, because you're right. You're not just seeing it from fifth row center. You're seeing it from 14 different camera angles. That's what we have set up. So now you get to see all the actors on stage, but you get to see the conductor from a different side as well. It's an amazing way of capturing the real live action, and yet giving you a different point of view, emphasizing facial expressions without changing the acting style. They're still, you know, acting on stage and capturing the real live. When we did She Loves Me, at one point, Laura Benigni is eating ice cream, and it actually fell onto her bed sheets, and she started really crying because it was all over. And we said, that's perfect. We're going to keep that in.
Do the actors, by the way, and I don't know, I'm sure your interaction as you set these things up is not so much with the performers, Stu, but I'm just curious, do you think it impacts, and you are an actor, you've got a degree in acting, do you think it and I've done stage and television, do you think it impacts people the night that they know they're being streamed out live with 14 cameras around? Do you think it's impacting their performance, or they're just doing the performance, they're going to do cameras or no cameras?
You know, they are professionals, and I will say that they do the same kind of performance as if it was opening night. But I will say that when we shoot, they are all pumped up because they feed off the audience, and the audience is all pumped up because this is really a special occasion. They've got the 14 cameras around them. They've got crew. We're working to capture this in front of a live audience, and it's almost like opening night all over again for them. So it's really exciting.
Let me ask Bonnie that you've got a couple of events coming up, March 22nd to 24th. These are going to be live streams. So, and what I want to do is I kind of have people over, because when it's live stream, the thing is, like, when it's intermission in the theater, it's really intermission on Broadway HD as well. You take a break, and I mean, sometimes you'll have people talking or whatever, but there's an intermission. So what a great idea to sort of have this service at home, if you can do it like I do, kind of on a wall, and have friends over. But tell me about the Gabriels, Election Year in the Life of One Family, coming up March 22nd to 24th. It's like three nights for parties.
Yes. I mean, to just go off of your instinct to gather socially and watch in front of a screen, I think that we're finding that quite often. I think so many times when you think of streaming services, people are watching on their phone, or they're watching on their tablet, or they're watching on their television by themselves. But our live events lend themselves to a social event. So with the ones that we've done previously, people gather together, all their friends, and they watch it, as you said, live, and it's more like, it's like the Super Bowl. So you've got themes, and they've got the food that matches what they're watching on screen, and it's just really a social event, which I find just so endearing, and I love, because that's like part of the theater that you're bringing into your living room.
Right.
Well,
just a couple of moments left, so I do want you to tell people about the Gabriels, the public theater presentation. For people who aren't familiar with it, what are they in for?
Well, they are in for one of the most exciting pieces of theater that we've had this past year, because it takes place in the real time. It's a contemporary play that takes place during the election year. You get three meals with the Gabriel family of Rhinebeck, New York, and we hear what they're going through in today's life, the problems they're facing, the challenges they're facing, and, of course, the noise coming out of the television sets of what's going on politically. So, and they reflect a lot of our feelings and mixed emotions that we're having today as it leads up to election night, and that's what the third play finally takes place. So I think your idea about having a party and a gathering, you could have Gabriel play parties and really experience your own meal while they're having their meal and going through their experiences.
I love it.
Live from the Public Theater here in New York.
And that is, it is the partner that we have on the Gabriel plays is the Public Theater. And the Public Theater is just one of the amazing theater organizations that we're lucky to have here in New York City, that is just famous for Shakespeare in the Park. They're famous for Hair. They're famous for having Hamilton come out of the Public Theater.
I'm sorry, Hamilton,
so the quality of the productions that have come out of this one theater company is just amazing. And we're so lucky to be partnering with that level of theater maker with Broadway HD.
Yeah,
so we're just thrilled.
I don't want to scare people off by saying that these are important plays, because I think they are. But, I mean, in the New York Times, they were comparing them to the importance of Clifford Odets' Waiting for Lefty, or plays like The Cradle Will Rock. I mean, these plays could become symbolic of our age, of the days we live today.
Yeah, and they're critically acclaimed. So you mentioned Hamilton. Is that a play? I'm kidding. A play with music.
Yeah, right.
hadn't heard of it. No, actually, I've done a special on Hamilton with Lin-Manuel and everybody else. Anyway, so having said
that came out of the Public Theater.
Yeah, I know.
That
that's right. That's what you were saying.
Same theater company.
Their work is absolutely incredible. So BroadwayHD.com is where you go to check it out. You can subscribe for a month. I actually subscribe by the year, because you kind of save a little money in doing that. So I sort of do it that way, and always checking it out when I'm just kind of hanging around at night in my bedroom. I'll kind of go to the channel and and just feel like, what do I feel like watching and check it out? Hey, I'm also a little nerdy. I send emails to you guys. You don't know it's me. Now you'll know it's me, but I'm always sending emails like asking about different shows and stuff. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Maybe you can't tell me the answer to this, or maybe you can. I don't know. But George Takei, of course, had his autobiographical show called Allegiance, which played for all too short on Broadway. But they filmed it, and so they're running it in theaters here and there. And I'm thinking, there's no way that doesn't make it on BroadwayHD.com. So make news for me and make me happy. Tell me you're going to run Allegiance, Stu.
We would love to. And that's exactly the type of thing that I think that we're going to be able to do really well with Broadway HD. Some of the shows that, as you said, it was a really good show. It just didn't last long enough on Broadway. And then George Takei wasn't going to go and travel and do the tour. So they were lucky enough to be able to do a digital capture. They're putting it in cinema first. But we would love to license that and put it on Broadway HD. So that's hopefully down the road. There's no... You know, no, I can't confirm that at all.
Okay.
If you know George, give us a call.
Yes.
I will call him. I will make it happen. You know, I have to say, and the way you just said that, Bonnie, really tells me what the future of this is, because if you think about shows that don't play it long on Broadway, and yet there's people like, you know, well, people like all of us who sort of say, well, I happen to have the cast recording, right, of that show that played three days, but they made the cast record, and I've got it. To me, that's what you guys are, that you will, in time, you will be filming, you will be capturing those shows which are not cats. They're not playing for 47 years on Broadway, but it's something that played for a little while, but there will be a record. And the record, by record, I mean record of it, which will be a video record, and it's going to be in BroadwayHD.com world. And I really think that's where this goes in the future. At least I'm praying that's what happens.
I think you're right. I mean, that's what we want to do. We want to have people, I mean, Stu and I, our first passion is for the live theater. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to extend the reach of these shows, and we're trying to extend the life of these shows. So if you missed it, if you can't get to Broadway, then get to Broadway HD. That's our motto. But the real thing is the live experience. So we're really trying to be a gateway for people that they can go to Broadway online through Broadway HD, see things that they like, and find out that, you know, it's opened up a new kind of entertainment for them, because a lot of people aren't going to get to New York, or they're not going to get to the big theaters that are in their states or their cities.
And it'll also
here's a way for you can enter and then go see the show. So
also is a way to get
I think we're going
to
provide a lot of that will be a gateway for people.
No question about it, and it'll get people to see theater in their own hometowns as well. By the way, early on, I know you guys are in New York, right?
Yes, that's our home.
This was great. When we first started, I kept hearing horns and traffic outside your window. I said, yes, this is New York. There is traffic outside.
I'm so sorry.
But no.
It got warm here today.
Look, it wouldn't have been as much
fun.
Can
we open the window?
If you were like in Dubuque, this wouldn't work. But you're in New York. Of course there's traffic going. And you're making me want a pretzel right now. So I'm going to actually get back to New York in the next weekend. And say, I actually have a question I'm going to ask you. But I'll do it offline. So hang with me for a little bit about a show preference that I've got with you. But anyway, so for right now, Stuart, Bonnie, I want to encourage everybody to go to BroadwayHD.com, check it out, try it out, and if you're a Broadway lover like I am, I think you're going to end up maybe writing me or Facebooking me and saying, wow, I'm having a great time with that. And I thank you guys for creating it, and I thank you guys for spending some time with me to talk about BroadwayHD.com.
Thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it.
We're going to take it out with a little music from Gypsy, because you can watch that on BroadwayHD.com as well.
Everything's coming up, roses and daffodils. Everything's coming up, sunshine and Santa Claus. Everything's coming up.